Sarah Wheeler, and this is the Mother Culture Movie Club, where we take on movies through the lens of motherhood and motherhood through the lens of movies. Woohoo! All right. I'm very excited to be here today. How are you feeling, Miranda?
I feel great. I'm really proud of myself because I stayed up late and I watched Tully. So I'm prepared.
You did your homework.
I'm fresh.
Check plus plus.
Freshly prepared. And then before I say anything else, I want to compliment you on your beautiful red lip.
Thank you. Thank you. I really, you know, this is like my whore's bath that I do for you every time we record, if I remember.
You
which
look
is
really...
that, you know, I just take a baby wipe, go under my armpits, smear on some lipstick.
Well,
there's probably some on my teeth.
No, it looks great. And I didn't do that this time. And now I see you and I really regret it.
So. It too is available to you.
Well, I was in a hurry this morning.
There's an old lipstick at the bottom of a drawer with like bacteria on it somewhere in your house that, and you too can have this. Yeah. Did you notice my nails?
Oh, hold them closer to the thing.
Since you last talked to me, I have become, I don't want to say spokesperson because I'm not receiving any money for this, but I guess like an evangelist, there we go, for nail stickers. They're not like fake nails. They're like literally stickers of nail polish and you apply them a specific way. And they kind of look and feel like a gel manicure.
Oh, fascinating.
But they aren't like whatever, you know, cancer drops are in that. I'm sure there's a little bit of cancer in these, but not quite as much. And they're cheaper and they last.
Interesting.
And so, yeah.
And it's not like totally fiddly impossible to put them on.
I think of myself as not a fiddly person, you know, like I'm not detail oriented. I'm someone who like last weekend discovered when I was driving 80 miles an hour on the highway that my keys were on the hood of my car.
Oh,
you
God.
Know, so if I can do it, I think you need to watch a YouTube video.
No, I can't. I can't.
What?
No.
That is like the lowest bar. You can't spend 3 minutes on YouTube.
You know, so I know that you have a diagnosed like attention thing, but I don't know what you call it.
Oh, you're going to pathologize me now.
Yeah, no, but myself, like, what do you call it when you, I cannot sit through a YouTube video. Like, it could be a 45 second YouTube how to do, and I am just skipping through. Like, I have no, there's something about, maybe it's like YouTube's vibe or something. I just want to get off of it as quickly as possible. So I'm like, if the information I need, like I watch a lot of gardening videos, for example, and I'm always trying to figure out how to prune my apple tree.
And I've watched, you definitely like, don't have ADHD. I already diagnosed you not with that.
So what is
just
this
the
for
word
your, like...
gardening? The phrase gardening video makes me want to take a nap.
Well, that's the thing. So I'm like always clicking, and they're always like, you know, I think they do it for the algorithm. They have to hit all the things. And so, but I want the 10 seconds where they actually show you how to prune. And then they're always like, you know, this branch is this branch and this one. And I'm like, I don't care. I just, you know, I want this to be over quickly.
So you're saying you're like a human being alive now.
I guess.
I think that's really just with the level of patience of like a modern human. Yeah.
Low.
I think that's reasonable.
I mean, I'm
still fast forwarding, but you get to like the 10 seconds you need.
I gotcha. And
So
lovely.
Anyway,
well, I'll teach you
how to do it.
There's a mom at Pickup who always has nice nails, and I always
there's
think she's
always
gotten
a mom
them
at
done.
Pickup with nice nails.
But she doesn't do that. I finally, after many months, I was like, so do you get manicures all the time? And she was like, no. It's like an Essie top coat, and she says it's kind of expensive, but it's expensive as in like $15 for like a little bottle. But she really does always look like she's had like a fresh manicure. So
I feel like though, like whenever somebody gives you like one product that makes them look amazing, it's just actually them. It's like just actually that they have like beautiful skin or the most luxurious hair, or like their nails are like the perfect shape and texture and don't have like weird fungus and crazy cuticles.
Or she's
do the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like she's good at, she's careful when she applies it. Like she actually just does a nice
job. Her keys on the hood of her car and get on the highway.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't know her well enough to know that. Yeah.
Well, figure it out. Yeah.
I'm going to work on it next time. All right. Well, speaking of mom friends.
Yeah. And we don't, you know, you did your homework, Miranda. So we don't want to do that thing, which I always hate as a student, which is like, I did the reading, but then we came to class and we don't actually talk about it. And I'm like punished for following directions. So we want to reward you for following directions and talk about Tully.
Yeah.
And we have a fantastic guest here today to join us. A Tully expert, really. I'm gonna go ahead and say, Janet Manley is here. She's a contributing editor at Literary Hub. She publishes Kafka's Baby, a Substack newsletter for people who have found themselves hurtling through an asteroid belt of epiphanies since becoming a parent. Woo! And want something fun to read. And it is fun. I can confirm that. She's fucking hilarious, and she's penned such iconic columns as "Only One Person Is Allowed to Gentle Parent My Kid, and That's Keanu Reeves," for McSweeney's, where she also used to work. And we're just so excited to have you here, Janet. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Tully.
Now, Janet, before we get into all of your Tully expertise, I want to set the stage for people that haven't seen Tully. If you haven't seen it and you want to, now is the time to pause and come back. It's on Netflix. You really have no excuse. It's pretty, I think it's like under 2 hours.
It is a tight 90.
It's a tight 90.
I was in bed. I started it. My kid went to bed at 9:30, which is not normal, but he lost his first tooth. So he like freaked out. He had to get up early. I was all ready to start the movie like at 8:45. And then he's like, Mom. And I was like, what? And he's like, my tooth fell out. And I was like, oh my God. So anyway, I started it at, I think it was like 9:38. And it was over slightly after 11. So this is a length of film that like a mother can handle.
Okay, so please add this to the list of things we love about this movie.
Yeah.
A tight 90.
Tight 90 is the best.
So go. If you have 90 minutes, go watch, come back. if you've already seen it or you've decided that you're going to forego it, know the spoilers are coming. We will remind everyone that Tully is the 2018 comedy. This is a question we can get into. I'm adding like a.
It called itself a comedy, right?
Yeah, and she got a Golden Globe nomination for comedy, but they also said the Bear is a comedy. So you know,
it's like that. It's that kind of comedy.
Yeah, it's funny. It stars Charlize Theron as Marlo. She's a beleaguered stay-at-home mom who is having her third child and grudgingly accepts the gift of a night nurse from her obnoxious brother, Mark Duplass. The night nurse, Tully, played by Station 11's Mackenzie Davis, adorable, cares for Marlo, empowers her, and reignites her connection to her younger self. She helps her have sex with her husband in a maid's costume. Everything seems to be going great, even Marlo's well-meaning schlub of an overworked husband, Ron Livingston, who you may know as Burger from Sex and the City, is impressed until Marlo and Tully have a wild night out and Marlo crashes the car into a river, which is when we discover, twist, that Tully wasn't real. Marlo goes back to her life, but everything does seem to be more balanced now. Burger even does the dishes. The movie premiered at Sundance, but I completely missed it, maybe because I was having my second child. And I didn't watch it until I was on a plane last year, and I just found it incredibly moving. And like a lot of things, I really wanted to talk about it, even though everybody already had. So I'm grateful to the two of you for having a late conversation with me. Janet, you covered the movie for Romper when it came out. What did Tully mean to you?
So I think a bit like when Bad Moms came out, right? We had to be excited that there was something for us, right? If you had a kid, Bad Moms might not have been the movie that you deserve, but it was the one that you got. And I think Tully was fascinating because it was explicitly a movie that was, you know, about the quote unquote messiness of new motherhood, right? And it was going to get into the postpartum phase, right? When we were, people were creating some of the language that we now use around it, like matrescence. This was only like popularized around that time, right? We had no words for the array of experiences that people go through, and the kind of spectrum of, like, you know, normal experience to like pathology, if you will. Right.
2018 was a long time ago in the mother culture.
This is a long time ago. Yeah. This is pre-COVID, right? We all thought we were doing fine before we went off the hole. And I think, you know, on a very superficial note, I think at Rumpa, you know, we were like, is this the first time we have seen mesh underpants on the big screen?
Yes,
I think it might have been pants.
Right. After she gives birth in the hospital, you mean the moment where you see her get up and walk to the bathroom and she's got those like
gown.
Yeah. With all like, you know, with all the like the stuff that you had to put in it. Remember, there's like the ice pack that you crush and then there's a sanitary pad. Yeah, it's quite something. I don't think I'd seen it before on film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see it until I had to wear it.
No, these were all surprises. So I think like you can't understate the amount of like service, right, that Diablo Cody was doing. She was like, mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to show you Charlize Theron, an actual model who has put on weight to, I guess, kind of show some kind of physical reality, which again, we can talk about how this is maybe an outdated like way to convey the difficulties of motherhood and that transition. But to show all of these things, like her, you know, struggling with her third kid, her in a car with like screaming kids, just like frozen in
that
a car park.
Was so real. That was very.
Oh my
real.
Gosh.
Right. We should mention she. The kind of B plot is that she has this son with, you know, they never say what kind of neurodivergence he seems to have. I do this professionally, so I obviously diagnosed him from my seat, but he, you know, he has a lot of challenges. She has to brush him in the mornings to give him kind of some like tactile sensory feedback. He's got a lot of challenges at school. He melts down in the car. So that's kind of like another little plot and adds to like the intensity of how much it's like kind of her against the world. And also, I think what a great mom she is.
I also want to add before we move on that, so you said she's a stay-at-home mom, but she actually works. She is a working mom. I think we're seeing her on her leave.
Oh.
Because there's a scene at the beginning when she's talking to the teacher, not the teacher, the administrator at her son's school. Mm-hmm. And she says something about like, I'm on leave. Starting yesterday or something. And then later in the film, she has a conversation with Tully where she is asked what she does for work. And she says, she's a like an HR person at a protein bar company.
Yeah. Well, I
2018.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And also, all I right. think that explains why I'd forgotten that she had a job, right? Because it's
right.
supposed
well,
to
you
be
don't
like
see
job.
It. Yeah. And you don't job. See it. But I think it's context yeah. that's interesting.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, I think there's things about this movie that make it more interesting. And I think it's one thing that makes it more interesting, like that she is, we're seeing her in this very specific moment in her life. And like the opening scene, when you talk about the brushing, like where she's brushing his skin, her son's skin with this like sensory brush or whatever. Like I was immediately like drawn in. I don't know. It was very sweet and beautiful.
Yeah, there's a lot of great images of like real
care,
you know, moments of motherhood. I read that like Jason Reitman and Diablo Cody surveyed the mothers in the crew on the film to get kind of more of like what they associated with the postpartum period. And that's why they added in so many little details of like the sound of the breast pump and very evocative.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, also the most beautiful that New Jersey had looked at the time on film, you know? It's like very idyllic at the beginning of the movie. You're like, it took me a while, I remember on the first watch, to realize it was New Jersey and not West Coast. It looked so lush. And it's not until she goes back to like her roots in Brooklyn that you're like, oh.
Well, isn't New Jersey, doesn't New Jersey kind of stand in for motherhood in a way? I mean, like, you know what I'm thinking about, like, Fleischman is in trouble.
Yeah.
Exactly. And like, you know, that when you're, even if you've never lived in these places, before you have kids, you're in New York City, and after, you're in New Jersey. And so like, even if this didn't actually take place in New Jersey, it would still be set in New Jersey. Spiritually.
No, I that is the psychic geography, right? Like, yeah, it is. You've been moved to another land. And it opens also with the, you know, it's the water imagery all the way through, right? It's like, where has she gone to? This is the whole thing.
Right. And she has those dreams about a mermaid at the beginning. That evoke. Mm-hmm. People get upset about the twist. My husband did not like the twist. He loves this movie, which is like why I love him. And he was like, I didn't need the twist. I just wanted it to be, you know, about her. Mm. Do you think that having like invented this night nurse that kind of saves her life is that really important to the whole message of the movie? Is it underselling it in one way? What was your take?
So at the time, Diablo Cody said that she had herself had a night nurse. Like she said, as a privileged Hollywood lady, like I had one, it was really nice. And there was something on that very simple level where in America, like, yes, you can solve the whole problem of early parenthood by outsourcing if you have enough money to get the extra care, right? To get the support. And I think that that was the fantasy for Diablo Cody. I think, did people view it as a fantasy movie? Not at all. I remember at the time, the biggest question that new mothers had was, you know, can I handle this movie? Or is it going to, you know, set me off? I think a lot of people had that sort of trepidation because they know it's Diablo Cody.
I did not watch it because, so my son was born December of 2017. And so right before and that was my first. And so right before Tully came out.
It came out May 2018.
Yeah. And I remember so like, oh, I'm like kind of interested in this because the way that it was marketed was kind of like, oh, okay, this is about mom. And then a friend of mine saw it and then I read something and I saw postpartum psychosis and I was like, oh, I'm not seeing that. Like, oh no. Like, oh, I can't handle that. And like, because it was way too close. And then I had another kid during the pandemic. And then, so just watching it last night, like I had a little bit of nerves about it because I had a bumpy time after my second was born. And like, but then it was fine. Like, so I was all prepared for it to be this whole thing. So then it wasn't a comedy, like a ha-ha comedy, but it was like much lighter, ultimately, I felt, than I had been bracing for. Like, the twist didn't feel violent and it didn't feel, and I don't know, I mean, we can get into this, but like, and I'm not a diagnostician or whatever, but I don't know that it looked like postpartum psychosis necessarily. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe it is. I don't.
Anyway. Well, that is one take, right? Like that she invented this. She had this hallucination, essentially.
I wonder, you know,
invented
like,
this person.
Yeah. I don't know. Was she just surviving? I mean, all the weird things we do to survive that period of time. I mean, I don't know.
Anyway. No, I mean, this is like the great question, right? When you can actually watch the movie, because you're not like, this is going to set me off and I'm going to have nightmares when I'm already like waking up and being like, where's my baby? And then seeing it neatly put away in the bassinet, right? So when you're past that and you're able to watch this movie and be like, okay, what do I think? You know, the question of whether there is something, whether she is experiencing some kind of perinatal mood and anxiety disorder, right? Like whether it is actually postpartum psychosis or it's a second bout of postpartum depression, I think is really interesting. It seems like they deliberately don't put that language in the film, right? There's there's like a very vague conversation at the end between Berga, whose name in the movie is Drew.
Husband.
Her husband.
Generic.
gamer husband guy who's quite oblivious for the third child, but okay.
Who also has job, but very, very
that requires travel.
Yeah.
Chill dude, Ron Livingstone. You know, he has a conversation with like a hospital psychiatric attending right at the end where she's like, something's wrong, buddy. And he's surprised, right? So at like the narrative level, they do say something is wrong, right? And we have to reconcile her going to Bushwick by herself, I guess, and getting drunk and then driving into a river. You know, like these are solid facts. It is not the realm of sort of magic realism or like, you know, it's not Pan's Labyrinth. So I think it's interesting that they didn't want to fit in one camp. They didn't want to say like, okay, here's the experience. And they did want to make it like, maybe, you know, the postpartum phase is just a bit of a, you know, delirium, I guess, but that is also a choice. That is also a very interesting choice and not, I think, you know, to use the online lingo, like an empowering choice to be like, don't worry, you guys might lose your minds for a little bit, but, you know, it's all just so you can get through it. It's very interesting.
I chose to believe what I wanted kind of with that ending. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with going crazy, right? Like let's not disparage that. There's nothing wrong with postpartum psychosis. I mean, it's a challenge that needs to be supported, but like it happens to people. And in some ways, it's a really normal reaction to a crazy thing happening, right? And so I don't want to say that the interpretation of the end being that she, you know, hallucinated this whole thing means that she's not trustworthy anymore. But I just chose to kind of take that lightly and think about, you know, what she did do by creating this character, by however you want to say it, having these conversations with herself, that she kind of healed herself by kind of re-engaging with the things that made her feel human. And moving to me.
Yeah, like I was thinking about that too. Like knowing, because I knew that. So I don't know if we fully have explained this. Like, but like, so you know, she is pregnant at the beginning of the movie. Pretty quickly, she has the baby. It's her third child. And she's on her maternity leave, and it's you know, pretty immediately into the cycles of postpartum life that we're mostly familiar with, where she's awake alone all night with the baby. And a lot of the movie is nights. It's her nights. It's her being so exhausted, and the days are hazy and the nights are more vivid and alone and
New Jersey nights.
And she's and her brother has offered a night nurse as a gift. He's wealthy and he offers her this, and she initially rejects it. And then we appear to see her decide to accept it. She calls this Tully person, and Tully starts showing up at night and caring for the baby, and then very quickly saying, I'm actually here to care for the whole, for all of you.
And she gives that kind of talk.
Yeah, and they become friends, and she involves herself in her sex life. She involves herself in her, they sit around and they talk about like philosophical stuff. And
she's basically a manic pixie dream nurse.
Yes, and it heals Tully, and I think, or it heals Marlo. And what I knew was that Tully was a fiction, like watching the movie. And so I think I found it kind of moving to imagine that this is Marlo caring for herself.
Yeah, exactly.
This is Marlo like reminding herself like who she is. And I used to, like, when I was in my postpartum times, both times, I would text myself like as a sort of a way to journal keep. But when I read it, a lot of it, especially in the early days with my first, like it's pep talks. Like they're almost like these little pep talks, you know?
Like what?
Like, you know, like the thing that I think is really funny is like, you know, not funny, haha, but funny the way this movie is funny. Like when my first was maybe like 7 days old, I wrote a list of all the things that we had already figured out. And I was like, oh, you know, I think we're really over the hump. Which, oh my God, aww. I mean, not even close, right?
That's and so but sweet, like though.
Trying to kind of like, or you know, and I would make little lists of like, okay, when you're having a slump, like remember that this makes you feel better. Or like remember that, you know, and I think I was trying to like
Tully
myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think the best interpretation, like rewatching it, especially once you know the twist and you can view it with clear eyes, right? Knowing that Bruce Willis, whatever, you know, we know that Tully, yeah,
we know that people.
Tully is her at a younger age. So it is her pre-kids, pre-family.
And it's, we learn, I'm sorry, Jan, we learn when we get the reveal that Tully was her maiden name.
Yes.
And that's, then that like stopped me in my tracks. I actually, like my heart stopped. I was so kind of and like, I was so emotional from that. Go on.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think, so like it works very well, I think, as like the ghost story. So I think that there's kind of this genre, right, of like the postpartum ghost story that has kind of emerged, right, where you have to journey along with like the younger self and with your childhood self, with your mother, like with the specters of all these different pieces, right? I think that you know, if the emphasis in the way they put the film together was, I mean, you could have told the story straight as that, do you know what I mean? I think it would have worked as well or even better, but I think it reflected like the moment that we were in, which again was 2018. We had like, I think Gwyneth Paltrow maybe was one of the celebrities that was like, I had postpartum depression. So like there was like a real emphasis on like, we're removing stigma, we're trying to normalize, we're trying to consciousness raise, right? The first drug for postpartum depression came on market like the next year. So this was like a real moment for that kind of discussion. And I think we've like, it's a more sophisticated discussion now, right? But I think the piece that I find still really nice is that Mackenzie Davis does such a nice job as Tully, right? She's like, she thinks she's beautiful. She thinks the baby like nursing is incredible. She's like, look at this. Look at what, how is he doing it? Which is funny because you do think that when you have a baby, you're like, oh my God, they eat and they grow and they move. And there's like a very sweet piece of it there, which very much goes against the kind of like, you know, I think what everyone was worried about was the horror of the twist and realizing that the floor is gone from out from under you, right? And you're in the night country underwater, right? Like these are the very obvious images and symbolism. And I think it's funny how heavy-handed I think the naming all is, like Malo. We're thinking like Joseph Conrad, Heart of Darkness, she's up the river.
Right.
Her husband's surname is Moreau, which I don't know, maybe not like, Isle of Dr. Moreau, but like, also another like shipwrecked thing. And Tully, I looked up, and that's like means like peacefulness, right? There's all these very, her child is called Mia. I mean, it's just like, I think there's something to be said for like 2018. These were like sharper, newer ideas. And I think that's really interesting to look at now that we have like more discussion around the breadth of the postpartum experience, right?
Yeah, it's interesting how cutting edge it is in that way. You talked about the postpartum ghost stories, and I just finished reading Julia Fine's The Upstairs House, which I believe was published in 2021, which is a story of, I mean, it's got a lot of parallels to Tully, of a woman postpartum with her first child being haunted by the ghost of the children's book author Margaret Wise Brown, who wrote Runaway Bunny and Goodnight Moon. And it's really a fabulous book. And it also kind of skirts that edge between ghost story and, you know, fantasy and postpartum psychosis. And it also has an ending where you're kind of wondering what it means and where you don't want to kind of undersell your faith in this main character of the mother, but you also want to believe the ghost story. And I wonder if like you think that kind of couching it in this fantasy having the twist made this more palatable for 2018 somehow for the mother culture then? Or do you think Reitman and Cody were really, you know, kind of creating a genre?
I mean, it's such a good question. I feel like the twist, like, added, I think it was adding the bell on top of, like, the pile of bells. Do you know what I mean? I think that you already had the thing and they needed to put a crazy twist on the end, like, oh, there's a reason to go see this movie. Other than we just don't have any really thoughtful representations of new motherhood, you know, beyond, like, I always think of Three Men and a Baby, like that poor mother. We don't even talk about her, but she was not doing well, right?
That's what we had before. Okay. Before
for the three guys to wind up with the baby, like she was not doing well. You know, I think, and also like Diablo Cody was not looking to be like every woman, right? That's not, that's not her kind of like lane. She's always trying to like break the story and find the new thing there.
Right. Well, Juno was an exploration, you know, a non-conventional exploration of motherhood, right? That was her first film.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's funny. So 2021 was also when Night Bitch by Rachel Yoda came out about a woman who essentially is a werewolf at night in the postpartum phase. And before that, Samantha Hunt's Mr. Splitfoot is really like a ghost story about, you know, a girl journeying along for 9 months, right? It's a 9 month journey through the woods of New York. So I think like it certainly contributed to this kind of idea and genre. I think it did, just looking at where it falls.
I think I have consumed like a fair amount of mother culture media and like it did feel fresh to me. Like here we are 6 years later and, you know, there was an element about its very existence that I found satisfying because I was seeing, you know, watching Charlize Theron, who is so famous and like so beautiful and all these things. She's really this iconic person. And anytime I see someone like, and I don't have like a particular affection for her, but I don't have, you know, I just like, she's, oh, wow, that's Charlize Theron. Like, you know, that she took time and is a, she's a producer of this film along with like these other people that she now has some kind of production company with, like, you know, to say like, there is validity in this and I'm going to like, we're going to make this movie about it. And the twist, I think, as it often is like such a distraction because we end up talking so much about that or even kind of like the, is it postpartum psychosis? Is it this? Is it that? Like, I like how the movie, you know, like they don't decide what it is and they don't like, like how they don't say what her son's neurodivergence is. Like they, you know, again and again, people in her life call it quirky and it irritates her. And she is just caring for her son. And at the end, she and her son together decide that they don't need to do the brushing anymore. Right. And like, and that's like, she's just kind of doing the thing and like being a human and I loved watching her kind of go through her days. And I don't know when I've seen like my experience reflected so, so truly like on screen in certain mundane ways and certain, you know, universal ways. And I think that as I watched it, I thought about how modern American it is. Like her isolation and her anticipation that it's her third child, that she anticipates like lonely nights and very little help. And I think like, I guess it felt important that she's a working mom to me because like in many ways, she and her partner, you know, should be quite equal, right? They're both working. They're both working parents together. It is not a division of labor where it's like, okay, I'm the home person and you're the earner. It's like, no, they're both earners and they're both, you know, and yet she's facing down. Like, so it highlights that in that inequity of like, no, this is still her burden and he doesn't have to think about it. I mean, he doesn't even know that Tully is a fiction.
Yeah, yeah, he's not even tracking. Yeah, you're bringing up one of my gripes, Miranda, about the like cultural reception of this movie, which is that in the New York Times review of this movie, Manola Dargis, who I often disagree with, talks about how she doesn't find a lot of the things in this movie believable, including that somebody with such a good head on their shoulder as Marlowe would not push back against her husband being so absent and uninvolved. And I don't know much about the personal life of Manola Dargis, but I was like, what world have you experienced? This is exactly how this goes. You know,
her review was like, wait, I was like, what planet are you living on? And also, he is caring for the older children. Like they show him totally very carefully, like
absent,
busy with the older one doing homework and doing, you know, and
the older one. I love, by the way, that oldest daughter just gets such short shrift in such a classic way. Like she's the oldest girl.
Yeah. The oldest daughter.
What was her name? We don't know.
Yeah.
I think it was Sarah, actually.
Jonah is the one that you like remember.
Classic oldest daughter. But anyway, I found all of that incredibly believable. The dynamic, between them without kind of making him a bad guy.
And they mentioned that it is an unplanned pregnancy. This is the point that her rich dick of a brother makes.
Oh, yeah, which I do want to talk about.
Down in his downstairs tiki room.
In his new bar.
Fantastic tiki bar, though. I would have a cocktail there. I was like, yeah.
Can we talk for a moment about the rich brother and Mark Duplass and his wife? They're kind of used as this foil in a way to contrast. They live in another part of New Jersey where the houses are very modern. And where you have a live-in nanny. And I mean, they're like a source of great comedy for the movie. There's that incredible line about their daughter being in a talent show and Marlo asks, what's her talent? And they say, Pilates, right? And you know, there's the wife at the dinner table saying, Siri, play hip hop.
Oh yes, it's so great.
You know, there's a lot of good stuff, but also I think, you know, there's definitely a culture war there about motherhood and parenting, right? That like kind of Marlo is the less wealthy and kind of more down to earth, less pretentious parent who's doing it all herself. And then here's the parents who don't mind having other people raise their kids essentially, and to, you know, really want their kids to like eat organic, you know, international foods. What, other than being like fucking hilarious, what do you think that dynamic was there for in the film, Janet?
I mean, you're right that it's comic relief. You know, there's a horrifying bit with a babysitter who is called Shasta, that is like a white chick, is telling, you know, Jonah asks for chicken nuggets. And she tells them about factory farming and how chickens' beaks are cut off. I think like the obvious point beyond these are just rich, terrible people, right? Who don't get it. They think that money can get around the problems, right? They have managed to push their kids off into the kids' room so they can have their dining table back. They can have their like Siri hip hop playlist back. They can have their nice wine and their underground tiki bar. There's not like the kid space, right? So like
We don't see the kid space.
Yeah, the kids are like off. They have their own kid dining room. And yeah, we don't know. But they're having like a potty in there, whatever. They have all the stuff. And instead, Marlo is like destroying herself, right? To like do the dry brushing, make the crappy meals that they're eating at their little circle table in their fine New Jersey house. It is funny that the movie has that awareness again in the dark ages of 2018, that, you know, this kind of inequality is not fair, but at the same time, the solution is like, well, the night nanny, like, well, that'll smooth things over, you know, we'll give you that. And Marlo pushes back on it, right? Like at the beginning of the film, she doesn't want a night nanny. She's like, that's not us. I don't outsource this thing. I don't want some stranger in my house. And, you know, when, what do we think? Like, obviously people, like, we can't do it alone. You need to have support. There needs to be something more. So it wasn't her brother. Her brother could have come over. Her sister-in-law could have come over and helped, right? We don't get that. They pay for a service, theoretically, right? Because at the end of the film, husband, as we'll call him, thinks that there was a night nurse. He's like, I just haven't seen her. But she's been coming at nights and helping. So he's like totally oblivious, right? However you want to explain the twist.
Right, yeah. The feasibility of it. Yeah, but in a way, they're right, right? I mean, it's true. They totally could do it themselves. They could be the village. But in a way, the obnoxious rich people, you know, they're trying to press help on her.
Also,
and
they didn't,
at the beginning, she won't take it.
They're,
you know,
not like me. You know, like, I think they are. We see it through Tully's eyes. Or, oh my God, I keep calling Tully. Marlo. We see it through Marlo's eyes. And her husband and her brother, like, don't get along. And so, you know, but
maybe
that
because
scene,
they look so similar. It's
they do look so similar. But the scene in the tiki bar, like, with her brother, I did feel like a comfort between them. And he was kind of self-aware, right? Like, he kind of knows that they think he's a dick. Like, he's just like, yeah, you know, but, like, I want my sister back. And,
yeah,
and
he says
that.
Since she has kids, it's like somebody snuffed a match.
Yeah. And so he is caring, right? He's caring in his way, and he's caring in a very American way, like, and a very capitalist way. Like, I'll put money where the problem is. And that is what our entire society tells you can do, right? We can't have support of our community because our community, everyone is busy trying to take care of themselves because it's so hard in our culture. But if you could throw some money at it, you might be able to buy yourself some help. You know, and so the brother is just successfully participating in the system that we live under.
Yes,
you know?
He is with his big matte black SUV. Exactly. Yeah.
And she's like self-protecting by, like, because they don't have that too, right? So they're like, well, I wouldn't want that anyway.
Well,
and,
but she's also being a bit of a martyr, which maybe I'm projecting. Well, let me wrap up by asking you to one final question, which is that if you had a Tully in your postpartum period, what would your Tully have been like? What would you have wanted? Or maybe you did have a Tully. What would your Tully be like? Would she have done for you?
Janet,
Miranda,
do you want to go? Who's going to go? I got offered I didn't get offered a Tully, but my mom, I was really having a hard time after my second was born. And, you know, I think my mom was trying to do anything. And she was like, you know, we could do a night doula, you know, for a couple times, and then you could get a couple nights of sleep, which was so generous and such a kind offer. And then I totally was like, it seemed like a fantasy, but I was like, oh, I don't want some weirdo, like, in my house. Like, I don't think I could sleep with just some stranger, like, holding my baby. Like, how would I know that they were okay? You know, and it all seemed too weird. So I just stayed exhausted. So that makes me feel like I don't even know. Like, it would be actually really hard to, like, be okay with that ultimately, which is weird.
Do you wish that you had been?
No. You know, I don't think it was. The thing is, like, it feels like the sleep is the problem and the sleep is part of the problem. But, like, I just wish someone both times would have told me to take Ativan sooner.
Yeah, that maybe your Tully
right
was a gentle psychiatry fairy. Yeah.
Both times it was just a friend being like, just take it. Just take it. Mm. Like, oh, okay. Now I feel okay.
How about you, Janet?
You know, I Googled, like, postpartum doulas. I remember looking it up, like, maybe we could stretch, or we could, you know, and, like, being like, I can't afford even one of those visits. You know, I was obviously in the US, and my family, my parents did come for my first child to be born, and then they left. And I think it's so funny. I did not know at all how to hold a baby. I remember learning, like, one position in the hospital and then being like, how else can I,
how can I
move this thing around? You know, how do I get it on and off? Like, how do I lift it up? You know, like, I didn't, there was, like, such a basic, like, knowledge thing that, and you're doing it every 2 hours through the night, it would have been amazing to have someone there just like helping get her on and get her off, like put her down, just that whole thing. Because I definitely had the, you know, the micro sleeps and the thing where you wake up and you're like, you know, and the baby, like the baby's not where you thought it was, for sure. Like, I think it does sound incredible to be able to pay to have someone just help get you through that little like passage, you know, the ship, so to speak, right?
Yeah. To, back to the water metaphors. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like it is a birth, right? That's what a birth is.
Get me back to Ibiza.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, and I know, I think only one or two people in like everyone I know that did have some kind of night nanny situation. And I think mostly we're talking about people with like twins, right? Where it's like logistically not doable. Yeah. It'd be nice, wouldn't it? And just to like, when I was sitting on my armchair that from IKEA, that was going to be my nursing chair, you know, just like to be able to yell out and be like, Seltzer, you know, or like, bring me watermelon, you know, I'm being sucked dry here.
Someone. Or like talk like a doula. Like, I feel like what would help me would have been like someone to be like, I think I'm freaking out right now. Mm-hmm. Like, and then to have them be like, well, it's day six. Like, you're probably having like a hormone, you know, someone to just kind of normalize like my little blips, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like it would be cool if you could get, if you had someone like during your pregnancy that you could then get comfortable with. So that you were then comfortable with them and they could hang around during those first.
Yeah. I mean, some doulas work like that, you know, they kind of do the whole thing, which makes sense. You build this relationship with someone, you know, you would want them after. Yeah.
And like $20,000 later. Concept
of a postpartum doula. But really for me, you know, for my first child, I think my husband took maybe 4 weeks off and then he had another 2 weeks. That's what was like covered by the state. And maybe he took that a little bit later or something. And then with my second, by then he worked for a much larger company that gave partners 4 months of paid leave. And so he was home for 4 months.
Oh yeah.
And that made a huge difference. Like just having my partner. I think for me, not being left alone all day, because we did share the nights pretty well. Like I gave both my kids bottles as well pretty early so that my husband could feed them. So he was up a lot in the nights even when he was working. But it was those days that really sent me to mental New Jersey and emotional New Jersey. Where, you know, where things really got dark. And I definitely could have used a manic pixie dream nurse telling me how beautiful I was and what a good job I was doing, what a good mom I was. Though my husband did that a lot.
And but, to take good photos. Yeah.
And to take good photos. but she does take some great photos. But, you know, so I watched the movie again this morning and, I realized that the first line of the movie is there's a bunch of scenery, minutes and minutes of Marlo brushing her son, doing that sensory brushing. And then several minutes in, the first line is that her son is holding his crotch. And she says, do you have to go to the bathroom, buddy? Mm. And he shakes his head no. And he says, oh, are you just being your best friend? And I was like, that's it. That's what this movie is. It's about a woman like being her best friend. And I don't think that I think the fantasy in Tully is that that can happen so quickly. And for me, I do think I've gone on that journey of like rediscovering not really my younger self, because my younger self wasn't that great, but maybe like a more grown up version of someone that's truly wholly me and not just in the context of my children. But I think that that had to come over, you know, like years of postpartum for me. But I think it has slowly, though. I haven't donned a maid's uniform yet.
Yeah. Your old
sexy maid.
Tiny apron.
Sexy maid. Yeah.
Still fits. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Janet Manley, so much for joining us to talk about this wonderful film.
Thank you both. This was such a treat.
Please subscribe to Janet's Substack. Janny, I'm giving you like your telly name.
That's my telly, yeah.
Is that your Manny?
That's my South Orange Manic Pixie name.
Your New Jersey. Yeah. Janice from New Jersey.
That's right.
Her Substack is so fabulous. We'll link to it. Watch Tully, everybody. You can handle it. Trust us.
Yeah, totally. It's fine. It's not funny, haha. Just
sometimes.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, funny. Oh. Thanks, Janet. Very much.
Thanks for listening to Mother Culture.
And like my mom always said, just take the Ativan.
Mother Culture is produced by Opus Knox Media with music by It's Electric. Follow us on Instagram at Mother Culture Show and find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to feed the all-knowing algorithm by liking, following, subscribing, rating, and reviewing. Thank you. And please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/motherculturepod, where you can follow us for free or become a paid member for just $5 a month, which honestly doesn't even get you a latte in major American cities these days. You'll support our production and receive some serious perks.